North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. It's Friday, September 20th, and you're tuned into North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson here as a solo host on behalf of KRFY, your community radio station. However, I'm joined this morning by not one, not two, but three representatives of the Sandpoint Reader. Zach Hagedon is here, the editor, Sansari Mitchell, staff writer, and John Reuter joining us for the first time, editor emeritus. Well, good morning, John. I'll say hi to you, and you can introduce your voice to the listeners.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Thanks for having this three-on-one conversation. And I just want to note, well, it is my first time on the show. I've been on this show over a decade ago, so it's my first time in 10 years.
Okay, right. So you've been in the studio before, the Tiki Room.
Yes.
As you say.
Okay. Yes. It looks very similar, I would say.
We were just commenting on that yesterday. That not, maybe the posters have changed, but yeah, the overall, the vibe is pretty much the same.
So it's a joy to be back.
Well, thank you and welcome back. Good morning, Sansari.
Good morning.
And good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Jack.
Well, here we are. Let's talk about the news before we talk about what else brings John to town. I'm going to start out in West Bonner County, a couple of news items. New trustee was sworn in for Zone 3, which means the board is now fully occupied following the resignation of Troy Reinbold of Zone 3. Delbert Pound was the only applicant for the position and was voted unanimously to be appointed to the board. He will serve until 2028 when Reinbold's what would have been Reinbold's second term will expire. But now that seat is held by Delbert Pound. The West Bonner County School District also received a grant from the Idaho Department of Education to fund a school resource officer for this school year, 24-25. There is a levy on the ballot in West Bonner County, as I think we've mentioned before, but that won't take effect until the 25-26 school year if it is passed. Trestle Creek, the proposed Trestle Creek development, there is a comment period now open on the proposed Idaho Club Marina development. The Army Corps of Engineers is taking comments until this September 25th, next Wednesday, and the Idaho Department of Lands will take comments until October 7th, when there will be a public hearing at Sandpoint High School for the Idaho Department of Lands. The big news story with your byline, Zach, there was jail time has been given following a post-primary fracas.
I love that word, fracas.
Yes.
That's word of the week.
Very good word. Yes, the 30 days plus probation and fines for battery and malicious injury to property for Michael Franco. That's following the story, which we can recap a little bit about just after the primary in May, when there was, yes, a fracas, an excellent word, at Sheepdog Supplies, involving a couple of candidates for office as well. The only person charged in that fracas was Michael Franco. The county Republican, the Central Committee has voted again on nominees to replace Luke Ahmet on the Board of County Commissioners. This is the second time they voted due to, I guess, an oversight or a technicality where, because Mr. Ahmet was still technically on the board, although he'd announced his resignation, they were not able to fill his seat until he had resigned. He is now no longer on the board, and the Bonney County Republican Party has voted, I believe, the exact same way to recommend to the governor three nominees to be appointed to that board, with Ron Korn, I think, being their first choice. And he won the that Republican primary for that self-same seat. Let's see. There's a big story in the Sandpoint Reader this week from Investigate West, a report by Daniel Walters, which we can comment on a little bit or not, but a blockbuster, a couple pages on the Idaho Freedom Caucus. I mentioned that, and I suppose you printed it, because prominently mentioned in that report are a couple of local figures of note. Scott Herndon, State Senator Scott Herndon, outgoing State Senator Scott Herndon, and State Senator Heather Scott. She is
Representative.
Representative. Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you. Representative Heather Scott are both prominent figures in that large report, and I'd be interested in hearing what you guys have to say about that later on. The festival at Sandpoint. Oh, my goodness. The headlines just keep coming. The festival at Sandpoint has announced that their season passes are on sale, and outside liquids will be prohibited in the year 2025 and presumably going forward after that at the festival at Sandpoint. This is a change from their policy for, I don't know, the last 40 years or however long that festival's been going on.
This one's a big deal. People are freaking out on social
media. My mouth just fell open. I'm learning these things. I should read the paper.
And I will also mention at this time, and we should mention again later, that there are actually two candidates forums scheduled for October for local candidates for office in the November election. The one hosted by the Sandpoint Reader and KRFY will be on the 15th of October. There's one on the 2nd of October hosted by the Daily Bee and KRFY. We're planning to broadcast that one as well, both of them taking place at Sandpoint High School. That's the new news, and there is more of it than I thought. For a minute there, I thought, boy, kind of a slow news week.
It sneaks up on you.
It does. It always does. And now here we are again, a little bit into the show. Let's see here. Where would you guys like to start? Should we start with the festival? That's the one that I guess drew the biggest response within the room here.
I mean, that's the one that everyone is talking about on Facebook and the local groups. Short answer to why they're doing it is that they claim that they're having a really hard time getting insurance.
Yeah.
And I guess that probably tracks with the general sense of the festival as it evolves. I mean, it's becoming more, it's becoming more of a sort of developed festival. I think back in the day, a lot of us might think about it as kind of a rustic, sort of like local thing. Mm-hmm. That we just did here. It's evolving into more of a established sort of institution. They've been struggling a lot with, insurance things. They've been struggling with the site itself being redeveloped. I think that we're looking at kind of version 2.0 of the festival emerging, mm-hmm. and this is a pretty clear indication that it's going to go in a different direction that a lot of us recognize. Now, there's some debate about whether that's good or bad. I'm not going to go there. I think that it remains the festival at Sandpoint. And I think that the idea of supporting it, regardless of what the policy changes are, is kind of where a lot of people have landed. And I would probably land there, too.
I think I would just say, the festival says in your article, and I think insurance concerns are driving this in large part, mm-hmm. and they are rather unusual in allowing outside liquids at all. They've been an outlier for years now.
Yeah, and most music festivals will not allow you to bring basically anything in.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's part and parcel with the whole trend toward like the increased security at the gates. With the way that they've reorganized the seating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just think it's a new festival, and you know, we can accept it, or we cannot, but you know,
yeah,
it remains what it is.
Okay. Santhre, any comment on that?
It'll be sorely missed.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
The outside drinks.
John?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, John, you anything to say about the festival's new policy?
Oh, I don't know that I want to venture hot takes on a such an institution as the festival. But yeah. I do, you know, the thing that occurs to me about Sandpoint, right, is it's a city that has always been changing.
Right.
And it's always terrible when it's changing and then wonderful and becomes time-honored and praised afterwards. Mm-hmm. I thought one of the things, you know, I'm just skimming through this article here too and reading it and going like, you know, they're still doing things like you can transfer festival passes between people on different nights. Like, that is not something actually that most like big festivals are doing. They're actually connecting those to particular people, right? They're doing these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so you see that it's still controlled by a board of people who live here, right?
Right.
It's mm-hmm. still at a site in a city park. So I think the heart of what it is still there. And I think that's always the challenge. That's always been the challenge at Sandpoint, right? Is how do you preserve the heart of these things while also dealing with the demands of like modernists and frankly, like the tremendous desire there is for people to come and visit Sandpoint, for people to come and live in Sandpoint, right? Which is hard. Like, the challenges of success are really hard. The only thing they're better than that are the challenges of failure, right? The only thing worse than having the festival get bigger would be having the festival go away. Mm-hmm. And if you have to pick between those two things, obviously bigger is the better thing. And then the question is how do we, right? I think the question has always been, how do you cling on to these things too? So mm-hmm. that's kind of my, anyway, that's my hot take in the moment as I hear this news and absorb it and just think about the festival that's meant so much to me during my life and I haven't been to for a while, but you know, I'd still go back. I still want to be there, mm-hmm. borrow a pass from a friend and get to go for a night. And, you know, there's a lot to really love still here.
Yeah.
Right.
That will be, yes. We'll see what, how that goes in 2025. And I'll be, like you said, there, it's already very, hotly commented on yes. social media. We'll see, see how that unfolds. Zach, how about this kind of, I guess we finally arrived at a resolution, legally anyway, of the events that immediately followed the primary. Let's see, the brawl, when did that happen? It was back in May. It was right May, after the primary.
Yeah, it was yeah. May 23rd, so just a few okay. days after the primary.
Yeah.
This is a weird story. It's, you know, kind of a story that could only live in Bonner County, where an individual named Mike Franco, he's a Clark Fork resident, self-described grassroots volunteer with the mm-hmm. local Republican Party, was apparently unhappy with the results of the primary in May and was driving on US 95 and apparently, according to the affidavit of probable cause that we got from the county, saw Dan Rose parked at Sheepdog Supplies. So Dan Rose is an independent candidate mm-hmm. for District 1 Senate running against Jim Woodward, who beat Scott Herndon, who is our current sitting Sagal Republican senator,
mm-hmm.
In the primary. So there was a lot of sour grapes after that primary, and Franco apparently saw Dan Rose's truck parked there, pulled in to have a conversation with him, apparently to bring him around, to bring him out of the cult-like political mentality that he mm-hmm. allegedly had been seduced into. Now, Sheepdog Supplies is owned by Spencer Hutchings, who was a former treasurer of the Bonner County Republican Central Committee until he was sort of removed from that office last September. Also ran unsuccessfully in that May primary for the House. Lost that to Mark Sauter, so House 1A. And so Dan and Spencer were hanging out at Dan's or at Spencer's store,
mm-hmm.
talking it out, whatever. Franco pulls in his truck, attempts to sort of accost them
yep.
verbally about, you know, whatever his beef was. There was a tussle that occurred. One of my favorite details from the affidavit is when Franco showed up in the store, both Spencer and Dan told him to leave. Dan agreed to go talk to him outside in the parking lot. Mike Franco leaves the store. Dan mm-hmm. tries to close the door behind him.
Ah.
Uh-huh. Kind of like the old, you know, psych.
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh. I'll meet you outside. And then he closes the door.
Right.
Well, Franco sticks his foot in the door to stop it from closing.
Yeah.
Then reaches through, grabs Dan Rose, pulls him out into the parking lot, and starts wailing on him on the ground.
Yeah.
Hutchings runs out, starts wailing on Franco.
Yep.
To let him to make him let go. It turns into this huge sort of fracas, as we've mm-hmm. said multiple times.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, the sheriff showed up, the sheriff's deputies showed up. They interviewed them both. It turned out that, you know, Franco was found guilty on account of, you know, battery and destruction of property, which I'm presuming is related to him hitting Spencer Hutchings' phone out of his hand, mm-hmm. stomping on it, and then throwing it at Dan Rose.
Yeah.
Who deflected it with his arm.
Yeah.
So it was a very dramatic scene. It's politically charged.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the deeper story here is that it indicates sort of the fractures within the local Republican institution.
Yeah.
Franco himself told me in a statement on Facebook that he was caught in between at least two political power structures. So,
okay.
I think that if we look beyond sort of the drama of a bunch of guys fighting in a parking lot, what we'll see is that there are parties within the party that are deeply opposed to each other and are willing to, you know, come to blows over it.
Yeah. Interesting that I thought after the initial reporting that he had gone to Sheepdog Supply to talk to the owner, Spencer Hutchings. But you're saying the person he was most interested in addressing was Mr. Rose.
Right.
Who, yeah, is an independent running for state senate, but that didn't really have, at least as far as I know, any kind of effect on the outcome of the May election.
Right. Well, I mean,
whereas Hutchings did. I mean, Hutchings was a candidate in May, and you know, his presence on the ballot had an effect that one could have taken issue with.
But there are deeper mm-hmm. levels too to Dan Rose's status as an independent. I mean, he was a former longtime member of the Republican Central Committee here.
Yep.
He used to represent Grouse Creek as a precinct committee man, but he has publicly and vocally butted heads with Scott Herndon, who mm-hmm. is the chair of the BCRCC, over what he calls, you know, Fight Club, quote unquote. He refers to this particular branch of the BCRCC under Herndon as the Fight Club, as a ultra-Christian sort of like exclusionary schism within the party.
Mm-hmm.
So Rose is running as an independent, not a Republican, because he wanted to skip through that primary process and go straight to the general to run against Jim Woodward.
Right.
So, I mean, Dan Rose is not an independent.
Yeah.
Like, really? he's a very staunch,
conservative. He's run as a Republican on the ballot a number of times.
Yeah, for different numerous seats. Offices.
Yeah. Okay, but this time he's as an independent. No charges filed against either Hutchings or Rose.
No.
It was, all Franco was the found to be the guilty party there. Okay, and he will, 30 days in jail, followed by probation, 18 months, and the fines or fees come to about $1,300 right. more than, Well, okay. Speaking of schisms within the Republican Party, this big report came to the reader by Daniel Walters. I would love to get him actually on the radio show, so I don't know if we need to go all the way, you know, fully dissect the piece, but maybe you can at least tell us how the piece arrived on your desk. Well, Mr. Editor, let's start with you. I assume you had to approve the piece and put it in the paper.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I'm hogging all the air.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll ask Sansre what she wants to talk about next.
So Investigate West is one of these nonprofit sort of news shops that have popped up over the past couple of years as the business model for community journalism has changed and become less profitable. You have these nonprofits. And Investigate West is specifically oriented toward investigative long-form journalism. They're based in Spokane. And Daniel Walters should be familiar to anyone who has read The Inlander over the past couple of years. I mean, he was like sort of their star player. He left. He now works for, I think, Report for America. It's a sort of a national reporting, like AmeriCorps kind of thing. He is sort of an expert on our extreme weird politics in this region. And this piece is about the Freedom Caucus, which sort of teeing off on that story about Mike Franco and Dan Rose and Spencer Hutchings and Herndon, delves deeper into kind of the fractures and the schisms within the party, where we have this so-called Freedom Caucus, which is part of a national network of, of right-wing, sort of ultra-conservative state groups run out of a national office. They have butted heads with the locals. So Herndon is now the director of another Freedom Caucus, branded Freedom Caucus.
Yeah.
And they're currently fighting about who gets to call themselves a Freedom Caucus, who gets to use the logo, who gets to, you know, have the trademark behind their name, who gets the gravitas of being a Freedom Caucus in the state. And it's just another example, like that other story, of how these people are all just fighting themselves.
Yeah.
There comes a point where your tent becomes so big that the only circus is, like, you know, among your friends.
Herndon, yes, is the leader of the Freedom Caucus, even, and he will maintain that position, I'm guessing, after he leaves. He's the, what was his official, I'm sorry, reading through this right now, his official
he's
position.
Called the director.
Okay, yeah. And even after he leaves office, he will still be the director of the Idaho Freedom
that
Caucus.
That has no connection to his elected office.
Right.
It's a private organization.
And that's in, yeah, and there is another, I guess he'll be representing sort of the more, the local or the state Freedom Caucus as opposed to the National Freedom Caucus. I guess I found that, I found this story very interesting, compelling even. I would agree. Yeah. And a couple of local characters tied up in it. Let's see. Should we talk about Trestle Creek a little bit? This is the... Well, I don't know. I mean, I can remember at least this being the third, and I think probably there's been ideas for developments at Trestle Creek going back years before that, too. Sanseray. Can you tell us about the Trestle Creek development? Have you reported on this a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
What is proposed?
So this development has roots going back to 2008. So they've been trying to get this going for a long time. It's gone through a lot of iterations. And last year, one was approved by the Idaho Department of Lands and the Army Corps of Engineers, which included a 105-slip community dock.
Yeah.
And recently, all of those permits were pulled because they no longer have the authority to build a community dock because they lost one of their parcels. It requires three adjacent parcels to build. So now, essentially, they have to start the entire process over again, and they're proposing now an 88-slip commercial marina as opposed to a community dock. And that does make a big difference because with a community dock, it can be kept private for members of the Idaho Club, the golf community. And with a commercial marina under Idaho law, 50% of the slips have to be made available to the public.
Okay.
And otherwise, no decisions have been made so far. The Idaho Department of Lands and the Army Corps of Engineers are just asking for public comment yet again. They're going to start with written comments. Then, as you said, there'll be a public forum hosted by the Office of Administrative Hearings on Monday, October 7th at the Sandpoint High School, where people will be able to get up and say their piece again if they don't want to write it down, or if they did write it down and they want to say it again. And that could reconvene on October 8th, the next day, because they had so many people testify last time, and it went far longer than they anticipated. So if that happens again, it will be a two-day forum.
Yeah. How do they lose their third parcel? How does one lose a parcel of land? That didn't move, I don't think.
Yeah. No, it's still there, we promise. There was a little changing of ownership. They agreed to give one of the parcels to... one of the indigenous tribes, that wasn't really made public a lot, so I can't give a lot of detail on that, but it was a part of their sort of commitment to ensuring the safety of the endangered bull trout in the area and also the preservation of a historic site that has been really crucial to the indigenous population of North Idaho. And something hinky happened along the way. So when they transferred that land, I guess they weren't playing ball anymore and lost that claim to a third parcel.
Well, interesting. You mentioned the bull trout. I think that was maybe the biggest, most commented on issue last time anyway, when that was first approved last year.
Yes.
A major concern.
Many of, like, the Idaho Conservation League and all of those different conservation groups have really zoned in on that, because Trestle Creek is about... It's the place where about half of the Pendere Basin's bull trout population spawns. And, of course, bull trout are protected. They're not considered endangered. They're considered...
Threatened.
Threatened, yes, thank you. Threatened in all of their known habitats, so Idaho, Montana, Nevada, Oregon, Washington. And so this is a massive point for that population. It's also a great place for Kokanee salmon spawning. And as many people said, it's just a community area where they love to go paddleboarding and watch the fish jump. And it will lose that appeal once it's been privatized. Though, of course, it has been and always has been private land since 2008. But we've never really treated it like private land in this community.
Yeah. Well, okay. So that is the big hearing is on October 7th with the Department of Lands. But yes, the Army Corps is also involved and has to sign off on this as well. And they're taking comment until September 25th, next Wednesday.
And public commenters for the Corps can request that they also host a meeting. It's not confirmed yet. They do have to get that request. But all you need to do is list a couple good reasons why they should have a public forum, and they will host it.
Okay. Well, look at that. It's 8:30. What are you guys doing later on tonight? Anything going on
that we should know about? I'm going to let John Reuter.
I'll get details wrong or something, but
I'll correct you.
Very appropriately. I'll do preamble. I'll give non-information. You'll give actual information. But, 20 years ago, this as of last July, Zach and Chris DeClure and I were sitting on a dock in McCall.
With some beverages.
And we said, we ought to start a newspaper. And Zach said, you ought to come up to my hometown and do it. And so we did. And so it is so appropriate now, basically, on the 20th anniversary of the paper in many ways, in between the conception and the birth of the paper here, period here, that we're celebrating it with a beer, right? Which I cannot think of anything that's more reader with this Drink the Reader beer. And give some more details here, Zach. Help me, save me here as I don't want to try to get people wayfinding here and send to the wrong place.
Well, where we're going to be tonight is at Matchwood Brewing here on Oak Street in downtown Sandpoint in the Granary District from 5:30 to 8. And we will be drinking our own branded reader beer, Drink the Reader, which I have not tasted. Sansaray's had it. I haven't had one yet.
It's delicious, light, with a bitter finish. Highly recommend.
Just like us, with a slightly bitter finish.
And if you want to support the reader, if you buy this beer, proceeds actually go to help the reader out there. And I think that's right. Many of you listening, right, almost all of you, I hope, have picked up the reader for now 20 years for free, never been charged a dime for it. And now here's a place where you can put your money where your mouth is and a beer where your mouth is by drinking the reader. And you get to feel like, how often in your life do you get to feel like you're doing a good thing by drinking? And it's great because the reader really started off with drinking and a conversation. And so I hope, my hope for this beer is very exciting. I think it's very exciting. It brought me back to town for the celebration here. But I hope that people will sort of replicate that experience where they'll go out with some friends, drink the reader, drink some reader beers, and talk about their community and think things over and have that sort of conversation.
And so have a brilliant idea.
And have a brilliant or terrible idea. Still out for debate which one it was, but certainly one that changed my life.
So this is going to be a good opportunity to, for us anyway, to think about, the two versions of the reader. So Reader 1.0, which was the one that John and Chris DeClure and I ran, and then Reader 2.0, which Ben Olson, as the publisher, had resurrected in 2015, has now existed longer than the first reader. So we're really celebrating two legacies at the same time.
I mean, literally it's true it's lasted longer, but I don't know if it's felt as long. I think that so you have to metaphysically, I don't know.
You know, I've aged significantly over the course of both of those
which
iterations.
Which period did you age more during, do you think? Was it reader one or reader two? Which one has aged you faster?
Maybe the second one.
Okay. Good to know.
The event is at Matchwood Brewing, and the beer is made by Matchwood Brewing. This is, I think, is this their second or third?
This is their fourth community can.
Fourth community can.
It's a great program where they specifically brew and brand a beer for a local institution. They've done the Panada. They've done Pondere Peddlers.
Yes.
They did Kinnexu Land Trust.
Ah, that's the one. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're the fourth, and we're very, that's really good company to be in. And
it's phenomenal.
What a fantastic program that Matchwood does. I mean, talk about a community supporter right there. Somebody should make a beer for Matchwood.
My understanding is if you buy a Matchwood beer, the proceeds go to Matchwood.
That's what I heard.
So, that's my understanding. So if you want to support a great local brewery, you can buy a Matchwood beer, and that will help them out.
It's a cool-looking can, too. Anybody who designed the can?
Matchwood hired some designers to do that.
It looks great.
It looks wonderful. I mean, we had some input, you know, but they did it themselves, and I think it looks wonderful.
The typewriter is a nice touch. The event is at 5:30 at Matchwood, kind of a big kickoff event tonight. Right. Okay.
We will see you there.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about the event itself? Is Ben coming and bringing his guitar or anything like that? Or remarks, I suppose.
It depends on how much beer.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's at Matchwood Brewing. The weather looks beautiful. I think people will be outside and in. Mm-hmm. And you guys will all be there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I hear that Chris McClure is going to come. Our third original partner will be out late in the night, a late arriver, right. which is normal for him. So some things haven't changed in 20 years.
John, you're just in town for the weekend?
I am. I'm here. Yep. I just arrived yesterday, and I'm just here for the weekend and then headed back home again. So it's nice to be back in my adopted home of Sandpoint and getting to see what's changed, and for me, always what hasn't is what I love. So.
Okay, I guess anything you want to share about what else you're up to these days, this weekend? Sorry about that. A little music there.
I just want to reflect on this story that we just talked about, right? About this place on the water, and I thought you said this really great thing about the idea that this, you know, people treat it as a public even though it wasn't, and I was just, this morning I just walked with Steven Sned, and he and I served on the city council together, and we were just walking the Pondere Bailey Trail this morning together too, which is another piece of land that was treated as public for years, but not till, you know, in my mind somewhat recently, but I guess it's over a decade now, was it actually public, right? It actually was private land. And so, and I think about the festival, right? And I just, coming back home to Sandpoint just reminds me how much there is that makes this community special, from the Panada to the Pondere Bay Trail, to the people who live here, to the reader, right? I'm so grateful for the work that people are doing to keep that paper going, to the festival. And I just think that Sandpoint will succeed if it continues to hold on to those things. And so I guess that's the thing I'm here thinking about, is how special this place is. And it's reminding me, and like, you just remembered, and so much of that specialness is still there. And of course it's under threat. It's been under threat for 40 years now, as people have come in and as things have changed and as modernization, as the world opens up, all these things have been under threat. But this community has done, from the Panada Moms to Steven Sneddon and Carrie Logan's work to keep the train station, the Amtrak station, actually in downtown. Right. You know, I think about the work that people have done throughout this community, to the festival, right? To what Ben Olson and the team at the Reader now have done to keep that paper going.
To KRFY 88.5.
To KRFY.
Radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
Here.
I don't know. So that's my thought. Is, I guess that's the thing I'm thinking about, is how do we keep holding on to those things? Because I, you know, to me, we so often think that we're judged by what we choose to build, and I think we should more often think about what we choose to preserve. So that's what I'll be thinking about over the weekend here, is admiring and appreciating what Sandpoint as a community has come together and preserved, including a paper that's very close to my heart.
Come on down to Matchwood Brewing to meet all three of these individuals tonight at 5:30. If you want to say hello, meet the press, as they say. Yeah. Are you guys excited to face the public or nervous, afraid of what people are going to come out? And as long as they buy a beer, they can talk to you, right?
Yes. You can throw the beer at us, even if you buy it. You will be checked for Rotten Tomatoes at the door, but okay. Otherwise...
Okay. We're very excited.
I did not agree to these terms. I'm not made aware of this agreement. There's like a beer dunk tank now I'm just finding out about here.
Yeah. You have no choice.
The Sandboy Reader's on newsstands every Thursday. The Reader beer is available at Matchwood Brewing, presumably once they open today, or at least 5:30, the big kickoff celebration. I will mention there was another little item in the Reader, I think under your byline, Zach, that there's an event coming up. KRFY's Little Live Radio Hour is next Tuesday. Please tune in for that at 8 o'clock p.m. The Community Character Hour next Monday is about the Long Bridge, the first Long Bridge. We're going to be talking about that at 8 a.m. on Monday, so tune in for that. The original wooden wagon bridge across Lake Pendere over to the Sagal area. If you want to learn more, that's 8 o'clock a.m. right here on this radio station. This has been North Idaho News of the Week, the Sandpoint Reader. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
And sharing the news with us. And with that, I will continue with Otto's Eclectic Mix and the regularly scheduled programming all day long with The Killers. You guys remember The Killers?
Oh, yeah.
All right, here they come. Here's The Killers.